The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Matthew. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you." The Gospel of our Lord.
Those attributes that Jesus in Matthew's Gospel and the author describe as things that count as blessed people are not intended, nor are we intended to hear this passage as individual attributes, as though you and I would create a list. Okay. Poor in spirit, check. Meek, check. Merciful, check. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, peacemaker, check. These are not, because if we were to do that, we lose, right? I mean, those things are in some way beyond us, at least on a regular basis. Maybe we're having a good day, maybe we're not having such a good day. Not the point. These are offered in the gospel tradition, and please note that the last of them, "Blessed are you when you are reviled and persecuted," this isn't Jesus talking. Well, it's Jesus talking, but it's the author of the gospel according to Matthew writing this into the text, having Jesus say it to the community at the end of the first century of the Common Era, because guess what? They are being reviled and persecuted by Imperial Rome. And so, you know, part of the gospel tradition is to interpret the message in the moment and in that time. And the scriptures do that on a regular basis. Things are added as the generations go by. So just make a little mental note of that. But again, these are the attributes, not of individuals checking off a checklist. These are the attributes of a community that is committed to living its life in the light of the teachings of Jesus. So that mercy and meekness and humility and poverty of spirit and hungering and thirsting for righteousness are the things that you and I embody as a people. Now, before Lisa comes up, I got to ask you, Lisa, and I thought about this, thought, well, maybe I shouldn't put her on the spot, but I already have, so here goes. Lisa, I noticed you're sitting with, is this your posse right here? Okay. You got, awesome. You have a posse. Okay. Growing up, and to this day, my grandmother remains my spiritual beacon. Good, solid Polish Catholic woman, devout, and she, at the age of 16, she lied to the authorities. I love this about my grandmother. She lied to the authorities so that she could sign on and be trained as a Red Cross nurse at the end of World War I. And that lie carried her throughout her entire life when she continued to serve as a Red Cross nurse, not just with the Red Cross, but in the neighborhood in which we grew up and lived. She fed people. She cared for their physical needs. She looked out for their welfare. She made sure that people had the kinds of resources they needed to live full and productive lives. She was a Red Cross nurse through and through to her dying day. At the age of 94, 3 weeks before she died and landed in a, what you call them? Nursing home, yeah, nursing home. She fell. She was 94 years old. She was out in the neighborhood taking care of people, doing her Red Cross nurse thing, which she always did. She fell. She landed in a nursing home, and a bed sore killed her. 3 weeks later, bam. And our collective memory as kids, siblings, cousins, the whole family, remember her for the Red Cross nurse that she was. And when she wasn't out in the community doing her thing and taking care of people, she was in her kitchen with all of us siblings and cousins sitting around talking with us about who is who and what was what and the things that were important in life while she baked magic. And I remember one day, she's at the stove doing what she always did, and she turns and she looks at all of us and she says, "Kids, it matters who you hang out with." I don't have a clue. I mean, then I had no clue what she was talking about. Thinking of myself as this sort of independent lone ranger kind of guy, you know, me against the world, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, all that stuff that we buy into from the vantage point of our culture. And it wasn't until years later, as a young adult raising my own children and hearing the words coming out of my mouth, "It matters who you hang out with." Yeah. When I began to realize the truth and the depth of her words. And I know you folks have heard this before. And I'd love to stand before you today, being, you know, all grown up and stuff. Nobody's buying this. But when it comes right down to it, even to this day, no matter where we are, our station in life, it still matters who we hang out with, doesn't it? It matters. And so, Lisa is here to share with us this morning, and she's got her posse. We got you.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Actually, my neighbor doesn't know it, but she came here to support me, and if I can't make it through the speech, she's willing to come up and read the rest of it. My name is Lisa Brerin, and first, let me say that I have two significant dates to share with you, one of which happens on September 17th, 6 weeks ago, when Reverend Jeff nonchalantly meandered over to me and asked me to stand up here and share my story today. With eyes bulging, straight up deer in the headlights look, heart pumping, I must have agreed since I'm standing up here today. I actually had to ask Isabel what he said after he left because I don't even remember. I was in shock. Okay. You see, I have a fear of speaking in front of people. I even took a class in college to subside these fears, but needless to say, I dropped the class. I am what you would call an adrenaline junkie. Love to bungee jump, skydive, roller coasters galore, but get me in front of people like this, and, well, you'll see. But all in all, after everything this church has done for me, it's the least I can do. I'll get to the second date I mentioned in a minute. A bit about myself and background. I was raised an Episcopalian and attended High Mass in Tucson, Arizona. When I say High Mass, I mean incense burning, the priest bellowing from a pulpit high into the ceiling. The congregation was quiet as a church mouse or else. You get the gist. At that time, I never seemed to connect to the sermons until I came here to St. Peter's and listened to the Reverends Kim and Jeff speak. To me, they speak in layman's terms and explain the meaning of text we all read that was written eons ago. When the sermons start here, I am drawn into them and am finally grateful to understand their meanings. It took me 10 years to achieve my associate's degree. I was working 2 to 3 jobs in Tucson while attending college, as we in the restaurant business call slinging hash. One of my jobs was at Canyon Ranch Health Spa, where we cooked for 300 plus people a day. I still love to cook and love to try out new recipes on my wonderful family of neighbors near Dayton. I secretly think of them as guinea pigs, but the truth be told, I just don't know how to cook for myself and my 4 dogs. I quit cooking to become a correctional officer with the state of Arizona. That lasted 4 years, and then off to my other passion and traveled all over. In 1992, I started working for the Federal Department of Justice as a correctional officer at the penitentiary in Lompoc, California. As soon as I stepped through those gates, I was bound and determined to walk out those doors after 20 years of service. I did my 20 years in Lompoc, ADX Florence, Supermax in Colorado, and Martinsburg, West Virginia. In Colorado, I was an investigative technician in charge of international terrorists. This brings me to the second significant date that I'll never forget, which was September 11, 2001, where the FBI stormed the institution, assuming inmate Ramzi Youssef was involved with this horrific event, because he had bombed the same site back in 1993. I had Ramzi Youssef on my caseload, and it was my responsibility to prove that he had nothing to do with this current event. I have never in my life been put in a position that I felt I was guilty until I proved my innocence. With this mindset in mind, I had no problems dealing with inmates for the remainder of my sentence. I survived and ended my career as an intelligence analyst with the counterterrorism unit in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Did my 20 and never looked back. I hadn't attended church on a regular basis since the late 70s. Since I knew no one in this area, I looked and found St. Peter's 3 years ago when we moved here. I looked online. I have to tell you that St. Peter's website drew me right in, from the beautiful church to the diverse congregation and open-mindedness. After scouring the website, I especially was drawn to newcomers were not singled out in embarrassing ways, nor asked to stand up or come up to introduce themselves. And if any of you know me, I probably would have run out that door. It stated that this church will make you feel right at home, and which it did. At this time in my life, I was going through numerous negative changes. My marriage was in cahoots. I lost part of my vision in one eye, and the other eye was starting to fail. I was also being tested for cancer. Basically, I was lost and felt that there was something big missing in my life. As soon as I stepped through these doors, I was met with open arms by Dick Pecoraro, as in Dick and Marty, and Dick French. After the service, Deacon Betty took me aside, and we had a wonderful conversation. And also Reverend Kim sat me down, and she was so compassionate and understanding that I actually broke down, which I was always taught not to do. I was so overwhelmed and in awe of these people who actually cared. In this little church, I have found peace, love, compassion, understanding, and lifelong friendships. This church and community has been an eye-opener. I've never witnessed either a church or community that does so much for each other. I have found my little piece of heaven here in this church amongst you all. It has helped me find and fulfill my lifelong passion, which is volunteering and helping others. It also offers so many other activities to participate in. I recently started up with the Women's Crafts on Saturdays. First words out of my mouth to Reverend Kim was, "I don't knit and I don't sew." Well, I didn't know it at the time, but she just smiled her smile and said, "No problem, you can work on cards." Well, after finishing about 14 cards, I'm going to ask her to teach me how to knit and sew. Just kidding, but I do understand her smile now. On my final note, it's the subtle feeling I get here at St. Peter's, especially feeling my mom's presence. You see, she loved the song "What a Wonderful World" by Louis Armstrong, which is played here quite often. It was the last card I gave her, which I found on her table where she always sat. It was one of those musical cards that kept on playing for me 2 years after she had passed. I truly believe I can feel her presence in my heart in this small little church I call home, and where I am blessed and belong amongst you all, I call my brothers and sisters. Thank you for your time.
Come here. Nice. Good job, Lisa. How many of you knew that she was a Fed? I did not know that till today. Okay. Yeah. Oh, boy. And, again, speaking of the saints and on All Saints Day, what Lisa does here and all around the community, it turns out, is exactly the same thing that my grandmother did her whole life, which was to look for opportunities to serve and to feed people in all kinds of ways. And so we are blessed to have Lisa and folks like her among us. And if you haven't been the recipient of the smile that Lisa described from the Reverend Kim, you will be at some point. I'm just, and when you receive it, you'll know that you've received it. Just putting that out there. So yeah. So here we want to dispel, you know, a rumor, and that is the rumor that some of us were taught as kids growing up that the saints of God, you know, were these larger-than-life people who performed these epic miracles and did all kinds of amazing things and yada, yada. And, oh, by the way, you'll never measure up. I mean, that was the message that we received, or at least the message that I heard as we were growing up. And today's the day to dispel that rumor, because that's all it is. Even as a kid, I remember sitting down and reading what are called hagiographies, lives of the saints, and discovering that all of these saints that were portrayed to be larger than life were all a little nutty. Kind of like you and me, nutty. And discover, wait a minute, there isn't this big separation between the saints and the rest of us. We're all a part of this deal. And what the church forgot that today you and I get to reclaim is this ancient image of the communion of the saints. And from ancient times, it was meant to be understood as the faithful of any flavor. Now, to be clear, You do not have to be Christian in order to be counted among the communion of the saints. It includes anyone who chooses to live the kind of faithful life that God would imagine for the world. You know, lives of peace and peacemaking, lives of grace, mercy, forgiveness, compassion, all the things that we talk about, lives of social justice, on and on it goes. Those are the things that God would imagine for the world. Anybody who lives those is a part of the communion of the saints, which past, present, and those yet to come, who have yet to even be born, are part of this fabulous image of the communion of the saints. And it includes you and me. And again, just to keep perspective on the saints, a little story. This occurred while Marietta and I were down in San Diego. She was delivering the part of her commission that has resulted in the Ombre, or the tabernacle, that now resides at All Saints in Palo Alto. So today is their feast day, and she had delivered the commission, all the pieces that she had made, and one day we decided to walk to Balboa Park. Anybody been to Balboa Park in San Diego? Wonderful place. And the walk itself was an adventure, since Google Maps had us walking on the freeway. I mean, come on, Google, get it together. And so finally, when we got there in one piece, we visited a place called the Museum of Man. Anybody ever been to the Museum of Man? It's just a fabulous place. Marietta was particularly taken by the exhibit on cannibalism. I mean, she ate it right up. My attention was caught by the exhibit on beer. Now get this. They described in this exhibit how the medieval monks and nuns were the purveyors of the finest beers in Europe and made these beers in the monasteries and the convents all around Europe. And according to the records, each monk and nun was allotted a gallon of beer a day. Now, before you get too excited, my math skills are pretty limited, as you know, but I had Brian McCurdy Brian did the math, and a gallon of beer comes out to, it's you told me it was like a 12-pack or 16 beers. Okay, so 16 beers is what that comes out to. And again, the point is, this is all about the saints, right? No wonder they were such spiritual communities in medieval times, in the monasteries and the convents, right? I mean, what a great way to begin each day. Gather in the chapel, you say morning prayer to break the great silence of each night, and then you go have a nip. You and I would be spiritual too, wouldn't we? The point is simply this, that you and I are counted among the saints. Whether we're willing to admit that or not, when we choose on a daily basis to align ourselves with the things that are most important to God, compassion, peace, grace, mercy, forgiveness, on it goes, healing, which we engage on a regular basis here. And what's required of us then is a willingness to sort of step out of our comfort zones. And recently I was reading, I love fantasy literature, have since I was a kid. Some of my favorite writers are actually, turns out to be either Church of England or Episcopalians, folks like J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, Ursula Le Guin. These are all Church of England and Episcopal folk. anyway, and have written some fabulous science fiction and fantasy. Well, this particular author, Gregory Maguire, if you haven't come across him, has taken all the traditional Grimm's fairy tale type stories like The Wizard of Oz. So this latest one, it's not his latest, it's his second latest, it's called After Alice. It's a whole spin on the story of Alice in Wonderland, and it focuses on another little girl, Alice's best friend named Ada. And here's how he describes little Ada, and I invite you to relate to it, as did I. Like many children, Ada was oblivious of the world in her immediate view. Cowslips and colleges, willows on the Isis and Cherwell rivers, morning bells rung on the summer wind. What meant these to Ada? She paid no heed to those inflexible cows on the other side of the water, standing in Marston Fields, or to that boat on the current, some curate rowing giddy girls about all on a midsummer's morning. Ada was encased in the husk of Ada. And so we gather in a place like St. Peter's on a day like today, the Feast of All Saints, to be encouraged and invited out of whatever husk you and I are encased in, and imagine that we as a people and as a community get to engage in the agenda and the imagination of God. And when we do, on a regular basis, we become part of the communion of saints and claim our place in that pantheon of people down through the ages. What a wonderful thing. And there's nothing about measuring up. Take a moment.